Welcome to Big Blend Radio with your hosts, Lisa and Nancy, editors of BigBlendMagazine.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Big Blend Radio's Toast of the Arts and Park show here on Big Blend Radio. Nancy and I are usually here. She's crawling around with her computer and she'll get here soon, hopefully. But, you know, every first Friday we host this show in collaboration with the National Parks Arts Foundation, which is an awesome organization. They really, artists from around the world apply to be an artist in residence within a national park or even sometimes just outside a national park for a full month. And Alice Leese has been on our show over the years when she was in Hawaii and then when she was also in Fort Union. And recently she went to Dry Tortugas National Park, which is off in the Florida Keys. And it's really interesting. Her husband Rob is here and Alice is here. But Alice, you were on our show a year ago talking about going, and you were going to go in September 2021. I know that changed up a little bit, but you guys both just got back from this. This is one of the most remote National Park artist residencies in the world, where you get to be on your own island on Loggerhead Key off the grid. And in fact, it takes that you have to have the two of you go. It has to have two people because you're so off grid. And when we chatted with you last year, you were like, well, it's going to be remote like it is for us on the ranch. You know, it shouldn't be a big deal. And apparently, Rob, you were fixing water pumps, so nothing really changed. Am I right about that?
We found a lot of similarities to being on Loggerhead Key and being on the ranch.
Yeah, a lot to just be remote. And then you were doing things too. You were doing a lot of the photography, right, Rob?
I was. That was part of the proposal. When we got there, we saw there's lots of sand, just like our ranch. There are cactus, prickly pear cactus, agave, and lots of old things that need fixing.
It's so like a ranch. Everything's broke or about to break.
Oh, so yeah. How do you fix things when you're that remote? Did you take your toolkit?
No, the park has a complete set of tools, everything I needed, and supplies such as PVC pipe, electric wire. Just, it was very good setup for me. I simply had to know where it was.
Mm. Did you know you were going to do that, or did that just kind of happen?
I didn't have a really firm idea of what I would be doing until I got there. I knew I would be maintaining a reverse osmosis system and also a battery system which is recharged by solar panels. But I really didn't have a good grasp of what I would be doing daily until I got there and started doing it. But
yeah, you were changing a water pump, a pressure pump, the first day.
When we got there, the pump that supplies water to the house was broken. And the head of maintenance was there doing orientation for us. And he pointed at that broken pump and said, well, there's your first job right there.
Sounds like a ranch. It does.
Very much.
Exactly. He changes pressure pumps all the time. So,
yeah. Well, okay. But no rattlesnakes on the island, right?
No. Or, you know,
there aren't any snakes. No snakes.
Wow. Everyone's going to clamber there now. Because I remember last time you were on, I was telling you that Nancy and I were going to go and stay on a farm out in North Carolina with guinea fowl. And you were like, well, that's cool because they take care of the rattlesnakes. Yep. But I will tell you what they did do. They protected Nancy from a very obnoxious rooster that held her hostage for half an hour.
Oh, wow.
But the guinea fowl that surrounded her and kind of protected and moved him off. And then somehow a coyote got him. So sad, but
got the rooster? Life.
The rooster, yeah.
Oh, well, that's kind of... I mean, he deserved it, right?
You don't hold Nancy hostage.
Hey, coyotes like chicken dinners.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they do. I think so. But it was, so did you see, I mean, in wildlife, you know, when you're saying that there's prickly pear cactus out there, the difference, you know, okay, now you have an ocean. So that's a little different. But I always say there's a connection with the desert and the ocean, but I mean, was this is different than Hawaii? I mean,
even yeah. Just... So you're talking about the connection between the desert and the ocean, and you know, I've thought about that too. Is in the desert, you can look as far as you can see and see the horizon. And it's the same way with the ocean. Mm. You can see the horizon. And so I felt right at home there. You know, if it had been in amongst the trees, I think we would have been claustrophobic because we couldn't see far away. But as far as wildlife goes, I was painting on the dock one evening and looked down, and there was about a 6-foot shark, a nurse shark. And I'd never seen a fish that big in my life. So that was interesting. Yeah.
Did you go swimming with it?
No. I think if I had seen that thing in the water, I'd learn how to walk on water real quick.
I saw that photo, and Rob, your photos are amazing. You took such amazing footage of the whole experience, and it's been really fun to watch you on Facebook, you know, posting all these images of, and also of Alice working, and the time lapse videos of her painting plein air. And you know, I'm going, you're doing plein air on the beach, like, I mean, the wind does come up, doesn't it, just kind of like the desert?
Oh yeah. Conditions. So my goal was to do 2 plein air paintings per day. And I finished up the 30 days with 59 paintings.
Wow. But
some days, you know, I only got 1 done. And then other days I get 3 or 4 done. It all depended on conditions, how hot it was. If it was too hot, you know, could work till noon and then had to quit and then start back up in the evening. If it was so windy that it was blowing everything over, you know, then I had to quit. But I could rig up a, you know, when you're painting, the wind blows your arm around, or it does mine. But anyway, I had a little strap that's kind of made out of rubber, and I can paint and have some tension on my arm to where it won't blow around. So I'd rig that up, and the easel I was using, I can weight it with my backpack, that I carry the easel in, so it won't blow over.
Wow.
So nothing ever blew over except for the camera every once in a while. It would blow over. But no, I never had to chase a painting because that's the way it is here. The wind blows all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, it started blowing in February and now it's April and it hadn't quit yet. So,
yeah. I've seen some crazy wind. Well, April, I know when we lived up in the high desert in Joshua Tree area, April and October were the months of wind, and sometimes they would stay a little longer and arrive a little earlier, and you just go, but you always knew it's coming, and it's a necessary thing. But yeah, you guys get that wind, but it happens on the beach too. But you had that little, you know, thing over your face. You were masked even on a remote island.
Okay, so the sun is so brutal. I guess it's because it's reflecting off the water and the sand, the white sand beach, and you're closer to the equator, that getting up every morning and just piling on that sunscreen got old real fast. So I had this hat and could cover up my neck and my face and then put the sunglasses on and then was good and didn't have to put so much sunscreen on. So that was why the hat was there.
So you guys both had to do training, right? For emergencies. And I mean, this is what I'm saying. You were remote. And I know a lot of, you know, the artists will go, yeah, I'd go again, but it was hard work. So I definitely going to ask you both, would you go back again? But being prepared for it, when you did all, you had to do a safety course and things like that. With the course, everything you prepared for through the Park Service, and all the safety stuff, was that still kind of like, oh yeah, like the ranch, or was that new and different?
Oh, it was pretty different. And I don't know how, I think some of the other artists had a different safety course, but ours was all about the bureaucracy of FEMA. And it, I mean, we know basic first aid, and that was probably more helpful than the FEMA training courses, because it was about how you submit your paperwork to get paid. And we're like, well, this, you know, this really, you know, if you're going to prepare for a hurricane, it's stuff like make sure you got water, make sure you got matches and a flashlight and communication equipment, and go to high ground and stuff like that. But there wasn't any of that in there.
That's different.
Yeah, it was a little different. I guess, you know, if
things have changed. Once so many hurricanes have happened, if you don't have that paperwork in, you're kind of up a tree too. So maybe that's why a lot of that has happened, that those things have to be done, because after the effect, it can be really a mess. I've been through wildfires and hurricanes and things like that, and it's a little bit of all of it, you know. So there is all that red tape that really sucks and is a pain, but it's when you go through it, it is necessary. It really is, and it doesn't seem like it until you need it. Let's put it that way.
Well, as Alice was saying, after we took the courses and got certified, we were scratching our heads as to why we needed this. And some people thought, you know, I think they told you to take the wrong courses.
Oh, maybe. Oh, maybe you took the wrong ones. For the house.
Anyway.
Well, you made it. You survived.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah, this is.
You made it. You survived. No, you didn't have to evacuate or anything. You were there all fine for a month. And, you know, so when you arrive, and I want to go back to, and everyone, we're going to make sure this links up to the very first interview we did with you, and, you know, this being remote, but so you went to get there, you go by boat, right? From the mainland.
Yeah. You get on the Yankee Freedom Ferry, and it's about a 2.5 hour ride out to Fort Jefferson. And then you unload from the ferry all your supplies for the month. You know, we had 5 suitcases and then 4 or 5 coolers with food. Pretty streamlined, but still a load. So unload all that and then store it in Fort Jefferson. And then we went on a tour with Curtis. Curtis was our National Parks liaison. He's part of the Park Service staff there. And he really guided us through it and did such a good job. He made it all seamless. And I just can't say thank you enough to him. But anyway, then you get put it all back on a smaller boat, which they call a whaler. Mm-hmm. And then, well, you better strap on, because when Curtis says we're going, and if you're not hanging on, you're going to be out of the boat, you know. So I've never
horsepower.
Been in a boat that fast, I don't think, but it was fun.
That's cool. And then you get to your lodging. So because you have to take your, you know, your supplies, your painting, photography supplies, and all the food, like you're saying, and get there, and that's that. Whatever you take, that's it. You know, it's like,
yeah.
But it's cool that you went to Fort Jefferson too. I saw that you did actually get to paint there, which is neat.
Yeah, I did. When we came back, we had to come back one day early, which we didn't want to do, but because weather was coming in, so they came Loggerhead Key one day early, and we stayed the night at Fort Jefferson, which was really a treat.
Mm-hmm. And, oh, cool.
Yeah, I got to paint over there, and Rob had a good time going around and meeting all the other maintenance people and the rest of the park staff, so.
But the fort is neat. I've heard it's haunted, and like there's scorpions and all kinds of cool things about it. What do you, I mean, did you get any weird vibes or see anything, you know?
Not at the fort, but over on Loggerhead, you know, I could tell something was there, but we were so busy. I just asked whatever it was to leave us alone because I'm busy painting. So please don't bother us.
And don't get in my paint. That's I've got it my own way, but it's really cool to see your art. And so I mean, it's just, It's beautiful. I mean, it's really neat to see you do the ocean and, you know, and then you've got the lighthouse, and then you've also got that one, there's that building that looks like it's falling into the ocean.
Oh, that's the boathouse from the Carnegie Institute, and it's slowly sinking into the ocean. I don't think they've been able to use it for a few years now. And it, you know, it's still there, and that's where the water pipe is that goes into the ocean for the desalinization plant.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
That building's fun to paint. It is there. It's up there on the west side, on the Gulf side, and it's kind of a, people ask me why it gets painted so much, and I think because it's a vertical structure that kind of breaks up all the horizontals of the ocean. And as an artist, sometimes you look for those verticals if mm-hmm. all you're doing is horizontals. So the lighthouse got painted a lot also because it's a nice vertical. Sailboats, painting them was fun.
Cool. So did you run out of food?
No.
It was close.
No, we had ate our last groceries on the last day.
Yeah.
Oh, so it was like perfect timing. It was like, yeah. It was meant to be.
Yeah.
Alice was one day short on art supplies. So while we were at the fort on those last two nights, she said, find me some cardboard to paint on. And we did.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I had some cardboard. Hey, yeah, I can tell you this, Lisa, that there was no chicken on Loggerhead Key.
No. Just now, beef.
Since we're cattle ranchers, we only took beef and fish.
Right. Well, beef and fish. So, I mean, you could have fished for fish, right?
No. Well, actually, there's no fishing right there around Loggerhead Key. It's
protected, right? Yeah.
Yeah, protected. They protect the loggerhead turtles. And I never got to see a turtle when we were going over on the whaler. You saw one.
Only that one.
Oh, but at least you saw one. Yeah. That's a, I would want to see the turtles but you saw the nurse shark, which is super cool. I think.
And that was neat. And you know, the water's so clear, it's almost unreal how clear it is. And you can see every fish, and we got to snorkel and swim.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Oh, it was really neat.
That is, to be able to snorkel to me is like just that connection with this whole other world, you know, and you think about how much water we do have on, you know, the earth, you know, so it's pretty cool to have that connection and be a little bit different with snorkeling and seeing fish, and the bird life had to be a little different too, you know?
Well, you know, the Dry Tortugas National Park, 99% of it is underwater.
Mm.
So, and the snorkeling is the water's so clear. It's, they say, some of the best snorkeling on the earth.
Mm.
And, so we took advantage of that. And then bird life. One thing that was interesting was that the birds didn't seem to be afraid of you like they are here back on the mainland, I guess. But the barn swallows would almost fly in between our legs. They just didn't seem to have any fear.
Oh wow.
And you could get pretty close. What did we see? A great blue heron?
We saw a heron, and we saw a great egret.
Great egret.
Mm-hmm.
And pelicans?
Lots of pelicans.
Yeah.
Oh, but they're cool.
Yeah, they are.
It's like, and pelicans, and then when you know, as we've been on the coast, you know, the last month or two. So it, you know, we were up in Anacortes, Washington, right on the water, and the seagulls would walk down the street. And, you know, we were just like, a friend of mine said, oh, those are city pigeons. I mean, beach pigeons, or, you know, but they're so, I think they're really beautiful. And it's just so nice to hear their cry, you know, and then all of a sudden, that's not a seagull. Those are pelicans, and they're big. I mean, seeing them catch fish and, you know, so that's a little different, but I think you do get pelicans in Texas. In fact, the last time we were in Texas, I photographed pelicans up in, was north of Salina, Texas, when we did that stupid drive on ice for 4 hours. When you guys had that winter thing that happened in February, and we still had to get to where we were going, and we got ourselves iced in the car. We couldn't get out of the car. And But we made it. We made it to our destination, and we went to get out of the car, and they had to come get us out. All they had to do was open the door. We just couldn't do it from the inside. But yeah, there's a National Wildlife Refuge. I was going to say Hagerman, I think it is. It's near, I think, a town called Sealy, or I'm going to get it wrong, but real small towns.
Well, there it's so far east from here.
Yeah, it's east. Yeah, and then we were going west to Lubbock. Here we go again. And there was a big wildlife refuge for bird watching, and we saw snow geese, just mass migration of snow geese, and then there were white pelicans. So yeah, they come into the inland areas on migration times, and so it was really cool to see them. I'm like, what are you doing in Texas? You should be at the beach in Texas, but what are you doing inland? And they're like, we're happy. so that had to be a little different from the ranch, because I don't know if you get pelican on the ranch.
No. Oh, we can't watch the pelicans fish on the ranch. No,
that's different. That's nice. Yeah. And different. What are the sunrise and sunsets like for you?
They're pretty here, but at Dry Tortugas they were really, really nice. You know, here we get a lot of dust, and the sunrises can get real red and lots of color, and it was the same way, I guess, because the light's reflecting through the moisture in the air, and it was the same way on Loggerhead Key, the sunrise and sunset. We made sure we were on the beach at some sunset every evening.
Sunset. And then for your paintings, you know, being out there in a different locale, was there anything that you grew from this experience and in your art side?
Oh yeah. Getting to use all my blues was really fun. There were some of the blues, and one of the blues of the water I could never mix from my basic palette. And so I dug around in my paint and found a blue that worked, and it's made by Gamblin, and it's called Cobalt Turquoise. And I think now they call it cobalt teal, but you just can't mix that color from ultramarine blue or cerulean blue or any of the basic blues. You know, it's its own color. It's made for, it's manufactured to be that color. So,
wow.
I think getting to do 59 paintings in 29 days.
That's crazy.
You have to grow. I mean, there's no other way. So I mean,
being, and you're still painting more, right? You're still painting more from this.
Oh yeah. So these paintings, and they're not all up here, but I can't get them all up there. But we'll take all of them and use them as resources, and also, you know, I always carry my sketchbook and use my sketchbook notes as resources for larger works, larger studio works. So, you know, these can get real big, and let me just let you look at this one.
Cool.
This one.
Oh, the nine.
That's an 18 by 20, and it's in progress, but that's a larger studio work that gets done from the resources that are gathered.
And you know, you take these sketches and, you know, the watercolors that you work off of that, but now what about what Rob has photographed? Does any of that help you?
Oh yeah, I use all the available resources. That would be anything he's written, any sounds that got recorded.
So you did like, so Rob, did you grow in photography doing this? I mean, this is a whole, I mean, I love your footage, and I'm like, every day I'm like, come on, what's new? I got to go see what's going on.
Well, being with Alice all these years has helped me. She's helped me develop an eye for composition. And so I'll give a lot of the credit to her, and the rest of the credit to iPhone. I have a iPhone 12, and they take amazing photographs.
Yeah.
So you didn't have to have like a huge camera setup anymore. It's really changed, hasn't it? I mean, it's changed.
Yeah. Well, if you're going to an island and you're trying to, you know, go without taking your whole studio, you have to streamline. And And, you know, iPhones are so portable and such good cameras that, you know, I understand and I love photography, and I understand when photographers want to take the real cameras and do the real photos, which are much better than the iPhone photos. But for my purposes, the iPhone photos work just fine.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, we understand being on the road full time. It's like there's only so much room in the car, even though I think it's starting to squeak. But it's got the squeakies. It's like, how much are you putting in there? It's like, it's bags of brochures that's weighing the car down, you know? So it's kind of, you have these things of learning, like, photograph what you want. You know, now it's like, you look at what photos we take, and half of it's information stuff more than the photography, you know, so that you remember what, who, what, and where, you know? So it's, right. But I understand that streamlining and getting out on an island and not being able to run to the store that quick. And you guys do live like that. I mean, it's, you,
oh yeah,
you're out in remote Texas.
Yeah, that was nothing new to us. You know, we were used to, we provide our own water out here. Sometimes we can eat farm to table. You know, we grow our own beef and we grow a garden. And cool. We're used to, you know, you can actually eat prickly pear, which there was a lot of on the island. And we thought, well, if worse comes to worse, we'll eat some of this prickly pear, you know, and we'll be just fine. I can remember when we were growing up, I was real little, but we had a wind charger that would charge batteries, which is sort of like the solar array that was on the island. And Rob had to fill up the batteries and keep the distilled water at a certain level. And it's like the same technology that we used the wind charger would charge batteries, and you had to make sure the level was at a certain point so that the electrodes would stick down in it and hold the charge and all that stuff. So, and if you left a light on or you used too much electricity, then you were out of electricity, and
that's it.
Work. So we knew how to do that.
We lived by generator for many years, and you don't waste. And it's like, when lights out or lights out, we used to have the little oil lanterns, and you know what I mean? It's like, but it was kind of closer to nature. And I think sometimes when you live like that, you don't put so much pollution into light pollution into the environment, which is something I wanted to say. You know, you've got that one painting, and actually we're recording this during International Dark Sky Week. When out there, being out remote in Texas, unless you have dust at night or wind, I mean, the stars are really cool when you're out in, you know, in the middle of nowhere. Right. And so it's got to be that for dry tortugas.
But out here, there's light pollution from all the oil exploration and production in the cities. Mm-hmm. On dry tortugas, it's the darkest dark that you can imagine. The moon is so bright, you can read a newspaper by it when it comes up. The stars are just incredible. And Rob got out a lot at night and did night photography with the iPhone. And it turned out pretty good.
Cool.
The stars were just incredible. And you could see from horizon to horizon. And it was just unreal.
And you could hear the ocean when you went to bed?
Yes.
That's magic to me. That's the magic.
So you're like 50 yards from the ocean on the east and the ocean on the west. You're right in the middle. So there's always ocean noise.
Mm. Now, when you left, were you kind of like, okay, that was a cool experience, I'm done? Or would you go back again?
I'd go back today.
What about you, Rob?
I'd go with her. We had a marvelous time.
That's awesome. And then you'd have to do the real FEMA papers.
Yeah, well, do the real FEMA training.
And they're going to go, okay, yeah. But now that you fixed everything on Loggerhead Key, you know. But so I just want to go, what is this reverse osmosis thing going that you were doing? What is that about?
Well, I had a pipe running into the west side ocean, and it drew water into a building that's got a reverse osmosis machine, desalinization. Oh, and that machine, it's a bit it can be finicky, and I had to dink with it quite a bit. And it produces water, which is stored in two large tanks. It would hold a total of 1,100 gallons. And everything went fine until probably the last week. There was a problem that I could not fix. And the men at the fort, the maintenance men, said, no, you can't fix this. You'll just have to get by with what you have. And in the night, a pipe cracked and I lost 185 gallons of water. It's just standing in the floor. So shut everything off, fixed that. And we made it just fine. When we left, there was probably 150 gallons in storage. And I wanted to leave it full, but I simply couldn't. Because it was a problem. They said, no, we've only got one specialist at the fort who can fix that. And he's gonna have to be the one to do it.
I think things also when you're on the ocean, like in the salt, does things to gear and equipment, you know?
Oh, yeah. Every metal object has got corrosion rust on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's different because you don't get that as much in Texas. You don't get as much salt, you know what I mean, in the air. So it's kind of it's a different thing. But I think it's so cool that you got out there and helped fix things, and our national parks, and we need to help, you know, as these are our treasures, you know, as citizens of the country, you know. And even when we travel to other countries and people come here, I think there's something different about these kind of interactive experiences, in that we're to give back feels better. And I think we as travelers need to adopt those kind of practices. What would you say after this experience about, because you're giving back too, you're it's a win-win situation. Your paintings go around the world, you know, people see what you're doing, it inspires them. Not anybody can just go to Loggerhead Key, you know. What you're showing is amazing. And what you're doing, Rob, is also giving back into the park, and you're giving to the park with what you're doing. And I don't know, it's just a win-win, and you know, everyone's getting something out of it. But I just feel like as we travel, what are we doing in return for the places that we're visiting? It's not just about the almighty tourism dollar.
It's like a personal thing with us. We leave it better than we found it. You know, that's the same way in ranching. We want to leave this place that we're stewards of better than we found it. The National Park Service was set up to protect and preserve our national parks, which were set aside by Congress and presidents. And so their responsibility is to steward those places. And that's what we saw when we were there, was their wholehearted devotion to that concept of we need to protect and preserve these places for visitors. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the way we are here. We'll have visitors out here, and we try to instill that, you know, we leave more than we take. We, you know, if you're grazing a place, you leave more grass than you eat. You rotational graze, you take care of the land.
See, and I remember I think it was the first time you came on the show, Alice, I think when you were in Fort Union, right? Was it, which one did you do first? I can't keep up with you now, man.
It was Fort Union.
It was. And you were talking about, you know, because that's also got ranching history out there, you know?
Oh yeah.
And settling the land, and, you know, with the forts, I mean, three forts, I think it had, you know, Fort Windy, talk about wind, my gosh. But when you were talking about ranching and how you don't even use, you know, like the ATVs to herd the cattle, I mean, still go out on horseback. So it's kind of that still connection to the land. I wonder about how that has influenced your painting, because when you look at your artwork, you're there, yet there's a softness, yet you're able to put rugged and soft together and make us feel like you're there, but in this cool set. I don't know. I just feel like maybe that goes into your art by being that connected.
Well, I know that it gives being able to spend time in these places gives it the work a sense of authenticity. I don't know that I could paint a place without having first been there and experienced it. It would just seem fake. I think maybe it's a sense of like that person has actually seen what they're painting.
Yeah, Nancy's like that with her wildlife art. She'll look at an artist and go, "You went to the zoo," versus "You saw the lion in the wild," or "You looked at somebody's photo in a book and I've seen the book."
Right. So my goal, and we talked to the park manager, Gerald?
Glenn Simpson.
Glenn, yeah.
And yeah, he's really nice man. And my goal is to take the park to other people that may never get to go there. So it needs to be authentic and to give them a sense of what it feels like to be there without having ever been there, you know. Mm.
A lot of people are not going to do Dry Tortugas that fast, you know, and it's funny. You know, one of the travel writers, Debbie Stone, she just came back from Dry Tortugas. She went to the Keys and there was a bunch of chickens there, apparently.
Yeah.
Talking about chickens.
Yeah, we saw those. We were like, what are all these chickens running around in?
Yeah, but she said it's an ordeal for people. You know, she went by seaplane and got to Fort Jefferson area. But some of these parks are like that. There are certain parks where you can't just drive your car and hope you can just take, you know, and that's part of the mystique and the wilderness preservation. And, you know, there's like Biscayne is also a marine park, you know, and so I think, you know, not everyone's going to have the ability to go. Not everyone has the ability to go to every park, you know, it's, I mean, we're trying, but I mean, there's
over 400 of them. I mean,
yeah.
That'd be a lot of traveling.
I know. So I think what you're doing is so great, sharing this. And I do want to bring up, I know that you have some events coming up June 9th. You're doing one with the Key West Art and Historical Society. So everyone, let me just do this. AliceLeese.com is the website, right? Alice, and that's L-E-E-S-E.com. Alice Leese, she's also on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter too. Yeah. And so on there you'll keep up with all these events, but I know you have one that's a virtual event on the 9th, so the public can connect with you on that. And then you have more.
I have three university shows coming up, to be determined when. And then there's a Nature Center, Sibley Nature Center in Midland, we'll have a program. So
cool,
exciting things. This work is going to go around so people can get to experience Loggerhead Key.
Awesome. And then are you going to apply for any more?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I want to go to Chico Canyon.
Would be cool. That would be, yeah. Chaco is amazing. And for Nancy and I, when we went there in 2019, yeah, the pandemic hadn't quite happened yet. And so that was 2019, right? I don't know anymore. But we went there, and to go to a place like Fort Union, going to Fort Union, you know, it's the same thing. We went there last year, and you just see everybody's art while you're there, from interviewing you all on the show and seeing your artwork. Like, I'm like, Alice sat right there. She stood there and painted. I know exactly what angle, because I'd go around and I'm like, she stood in the wind doing that here. Like, how did she do this? You know, Fort Windy. So the same with Chaco was like, wow. You know, I just saw all the artwork of all the artists that had been there, just kept going through, you know, and trying to figure out.
You get a nice visual in your head. You know exactly what they're talking about. Yeah.
It's really cool. And Fort Union, especially because it's such a plain, a lot of you and some other artists had been there, like Patricia had been there and done plein air. And I could not believe. I had a phone call that I had to take. Unfortunately, you know, I don't like to do that in a park, but I had to take this phone call, and I'm trying to answer the phone, and I had to duck behind the Adobe wall. I said, "You would never believe what I'm doing to get this phone call."
Yeah.
And she's like, "What is that sound?" I'm like, "It's called Fort Windy. It has its own song." You know, so yeah. I'm glad. So where do you want to go next?
Well, I get to go to Hawaii next.
You're going back to Hawaii? Which part?
Yes, Hawaii Volcanoes National Park. Yes. So that's going to be fun.
Oh, and Rob, are you going so you can work on the house?
Well, Tanya's house is in fine shape, and I may get to go for a week. September is a busy time on our ranch, but I think I can swing it for a week.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a beautiful house. They've worked hard on that house. There's even a recording studio and I think a dance floor, and every artist that we've interviewed, musician, writer, they're just like, this, you know, do we have to leave? You have the view of the ocean again. You've got good coffee in Hawaii. I mean, I'd go just for the coffee, but Hawaii volcanoes, it's going to be awesome. So, well, congratulations. And we'll have to chat with you again when you get there for sure.
Yeah. And the Kilauea is erupting now.
Oh, wow. So everything's going to change again. See, that's the cool thing about Hawaii, you know?
The earth is alive. That's what I heard.
It is. It is.
Live.
Yeah. Well, very cool. Well, thank you for joining us again. I know Nancy's bummed to miss you, but this update decided to take her and put her in the computer with the update, apparently.
Well, hopefully,
she'll come out soon, but hopefully we'll see you when we get to Texas, and which won't be very long. It'll be in about a month and a half. We'll be out in Texas, so hopefully we'll come see you guys. And but everyone, again, the National Parks Arts Foundation, go to their website, nationalparksartsfoundation.org, and apply. They have such amazing residencies, like you're hearing Chaco Canyon, Fort Union, and Dry Tortugas, you know. So there it is, National Parks Arts Foundation. Keep up with us at bigblendradio.com. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Lisa.